auch im Stahlrad leben mit den Challenges. Du hast mal mit dem Gewinn des Rades. We have to have a very busy day today. We are going to have a very busy day, and we should be sticking to time. And so today, this is the arrangement. We'll be getting a briefing from Sunparks about poaching and whatever as listed in the program. At 12, we'll be visiting the residences, which are not far from here, until 1, and 1 is lunch. Then starting with the parliamentary session at 2. And that would end our day. And tomorrow we would start again at 8:30 and see a summary of what has happened. There were some members who were not clear as to why we came here, whilst we could link virtually. But I indicated that this was our request as a committee to have oversight at Kruger. But unfortunately, parliamentary groups have encroached it. But our coming here was conditionally approved on the basis that Thursday, from 10, would set aside time for the parliamentary program. So that's the explanation, but I'm giving that explanation so that if there are any people who have got questions, and but we will assess tomorrow the impact of our visit here. Otherwise, thank you very much, Sunparks. I know the chairperson of the board said she would be leaving after 10, and we have agreed she will not be part of us tomorrow. The session where she is going, I was also supposed to join that session. But we're still negotiating to see if we can have an official who would be part of that, this climate change so that we can fit from that session. Otherwise, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm handing over to you to introduce what would be presented to us here so that we can hear your voice for the last time.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. And I think that yesterday evening you went and had a look to understand a bit about the work that Sandcroft does in relation to law enforcement and its anti-poaching operations. I think that today what we are going to do is to try and locate that within a broader context and within Sandparks's broader strategy. I think there are just two things to say from the perspective of the board. The first thing is that Sandparks has, over the last decade or so, had to spend more and more of its resources in order to address the issues related to anti-poaching. And it is a matter, I think, of deep regret to the organization that our staff who should be doing conservation management are having to do law enforcement and, in fact, are, in doing that, are placing their lives at risk and are putting themselves in positions of considerable danger and considerable suffering. So I think that is the one thing to say. It's not this, the necessity for us to do so is understood, but I think that we need to look at the toll that it takes on our rangers and on our staff and understand that this is nothing that is desirable. I think the second thing that we do understand is that when we catch poachers in the park as we do, what we are doing is finding young men generally who are coming from very poor communities on the boundaries of the park and for whom poaching offers a means of earning a living despite the risks and the dangers of it. And that unless we address that poverty and unless we address the deprivation that exists on the outside of the park, our ability to be able to stop stop poaching and to be able to crack the syndicates that are at the top of this chain is going to be very limited. So I think that the socioeconomic context that we're operating in and the responsibilities that we all have to those communities, and I mean not only Sandparks but government in broadly, to look at the conditions, the employment opportunities, the service delivery issues in those communities outside of the park is really a huge issue. And then the issue I'm certain you'll look at in detail today is really how we approach this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning. Morning, honorable members. I hope you slept good. If there are any problems experienced with our accommodation, we are available to assist. The presentation of today will be done by Mr. Mbongeni Thukela, who is the mission area manager, also acting head of head ranger. I just want to speak to one slide, members. Can you go to the next slide? One slide. Okay, thank you. This slide, as you know that as South Africa, in the Southern Deep, we have what we call the asset. Asset is our natural heritage. Happen to be rhinos, which are in demand, or elephants. In this case, we are under attack because of the rhino horn. Once you have an asset, you have a demand, you are in trouble. Now, how do you deal with that demand? We all know that any trade in rhino horn is prohibited internationally. Therefore, if rhino is our asset, not the horn, but people are after the horn, to get the horn, we must kill the rhino. They don't eat the rhino, but they want the horn from the rhino. But they kill the heritage. Therefore, there's a need to deal with that demand. That area is beyond us. Is beyond us as Sandparks because the demand is beyond our shores in the Asian bloc. Therefore, the demand management is one thing our government should be doing with those so-called consumer states. Now, with this demand, it's not a normal supply demand, the normal trading. It's an underground demand. It's driven by syndicates.
syndicates who are driven by greed. The greed plus poverty, which she spoke about. The people next to our path are trapped in poverty, but the greed is by the syndicates. Syndicates go and recruit young men in most cases. In the case of Kruger, they recruit young people of Mozambique, young people of South Africa in the western boundary to come become sharpshooters. We as SANParks, we are not getting excited by arresting these young people. As the chain law, we know they are the brothers, cousins, uncles of our agents. We want to go beyond that if we wish. Therefore, it's organized crime. Although people, when they look at this, they say, SANParks, what are you doing about it? It's a complex process. For us to enter our parks, we use a gate, we give you a permit. When we're in the park at night, we have no choice to arrest you. In arresting you, you happen to be poor. This is African bush. Things happen at night. That's why you saw yesterday the demonstration. We have militarized our rangers. We militarize them because we want to protect them. They must be safe. We can't give them a stick to go and say, stop, protect assets. At times we are criticized to say, why are you doing this? These are not soldiers. They are in the bush. We train them thoroughly so that they can deal with the crime. If we happen to lose a ranger, we must be able to go and face the family, face the children, and say, your father, your uncle, your aunt was ready. Therefore, I want to clarify this thing while we militarize them. They joined conservation, as she indicated, for the love of nature, not to work as soldiers. Unfortunately, is the phenomenon in Africa. Rangers are lost in the African bush, not only in South Africa, in the world continent, because of syndicates demanding the heritage. We have a duty to protect that heritage. I just want to indicate, honorable members, that we do covert operations, unfortunately. Besides the ranger corps that is busy in the park, we have our own staff working with the hawks beyond our borders because they know better how to deal with these issues, how to track the horns. Therefore, it's a complex process. That's why it needs the whole cluster. I wish one day this committee brings security cluster members to come and also listen to this presentation because we don't want to be on our own. Some of the information, we don't share it easily, honored members, because of that type of covert operations. Whatever we do, we want to make sure that our information is safe. With that, I'll hand over to Bongeni Tokela to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much. I'll take this one.
Good morning, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mboweni Tugela. I am the mission area manager for the Kruger and acting head ranger at the moment. My presentation will take us through some of the issues that the CE has already alluded to and the chairperson as well. To kick off, we need to look at the environmental aspect, which is the rhino. And we are saying, as SANParks, the rhino will not disappear on our watch, not while we're still here. Maybe long after we're gone, the rhino will disappear. But it's got a serious cost implication to us as SANParks. It costs a lot of money to manage, to protect, and to ensure that we got rhino into the next millennium. We are also sitting with a huge stockpile of natural death collected rhino horns in our ivory and rhino vault. Some people equate the value of a rhino horn to be much more expensive than platinum or gold. I don't know. For us, it's the live rhino that is valuable. So we have to start looking at treating and according that rhino, the value it demands while it's still alive, not a dead rhino. The biggest challenge that you're sitting with, we in Africa are the suppliers of the demand. We have the asset. South Africa, Botswana, Namibia, to a lesser extent Zimbabwe, Kenya, Tanzania, have got the assets. But the assets are not being used here. The asset that is in demand globally, which is the rhino horn, is being used in China, Vietnam, Laos, and even places like Yemen. In Yemen, it's a rite of age for boys, whereby they get given a jambia. A jambia is a sword that a parent will give to his son when he comes of age. The hilt of that is the handle, is made of anything. Could be cow horn, but for the purpose of status, the rhino horn is being used. So when boys come out of age at the age of 12, in that rite of passage, they get given this jambia. A jambia is something that looks like this, for those that are looking. That's the handle that you see there. Some of it is ornate and well decorated, and some are just plain. But if you're affluent, you make sure that you get one that is made of a rhino horn. But there are many uses of rhino horn, and in interviews with some of the traditional practitioners in China, they say it is used to cool the body when heated up, that is to treat flu, fevers and flu, as a result of bacteria and viruses that might be attacking the body. But for the more affluent and young people that are coming up, they are using it differently. They are using it as a libation cup. If you got a rhino horn libation cup, you've made it, you've arrived. But also, they think it can detect the presence of poisons in the liquid that you'll be consuming. So they consume their liquids using this as a status symbol first, and secondly, as to make sure that they can detect poisoning, because they are not a trusting crowd. What's happening here? Sorry about that, it ran. Okay. If we look at other uses of the rhino horn, the biggest use of rhino horn is jewelry, is ornaments, and that takes about 70% of the horn itself. Offcuts that would have fallen off after they've done all those ornaments and stuff would be used for medicinal purposes. These are the kind of ornaments that you'll find, those carvings and also the trinkets that they put on their hands to make themselves look better and beautiful. Now we have to look at what are we as law enforcement and conservationists have to do in order to be successful in protecting the asset. We have to look at enforcement as an integral part of all our management. We should not be only focusing on anti-poaching. We should be looking at the whole spectrum of conservation and law enforcement. It's a whole of government. It's not a SANParks thing. It's not a Department of Environment thing. The whole of government should be involved. We need to have that co-execution process entrenched in all of our government departments. We need money to do that. We need a lot of resources to be liberated in order for us to be able to protect the resource. And we need to be able to use technology to protect this resource. We have to remember this is not a once-off thing. We have to sustain this into the next millennium, into the next generation, if we are to be successful in protecting and preserving the species. In context, let's look at the Kruger National Park. What is the Kruger Challenge? Kruger National Park is a very, very big place. It's 2 million hectares big. You can fit in a number of countries into the Kruger. The likes of Luxembourg, Bahrain, Mauritius, Samoa, Liboa, Lebanon. They can fit if we were to transpose them onto the Kruger. And all those countries, they've got armies, they've got security services that far surpass what we have in terms of protecting the asset here in the Kruger. This 2 million hectares that we're talking about has got a 380-kilometer international boundary with Mozambique and 60-kilometer boundary with Zimbabwe. And that border is the border to stop animals going out, not to stop people coming in. So it's not a border where we can say we'll be able to stop people coming in. We got on our eastern boundary to the Bombo Range, which gives the poacher coming from Mozambique the advantage of high ground. If you're in the military, you'd understand that those who command the high ground command the war. So those guys command the war because they can observe, can use the ground to their advantage. They can see us without seeing them and also be able to infiltrate. We have another biggest challenge. We are hosting about 1.5 million. We were before COVID, of course, tourists into the park. As I have alluded to, we've got 2 international boundaries and also we've got a bigger boundary on our western side with communities from north to south. Our overall boundary that we have to manage is 1,000 kilometers. So what is our way forward? How do we think we can deal with this? So we devised a sort of a concept of operation to deal with this. One of them was to protect this Kruger. We coined it the Fortress Kruger, where we looked at how best can we deal with this, talking to static obstacles like your pickets, your gates, dealing with access control, your patrols, foot, bicycles, motorcycles, vehicles, and even lighter aircraft. We needed to be reactive by being persistent and unpredictable. We need actionable tactical intelligence. That's why we have alliances. That's why we're working with police, we're working with the military, those components that deal with intelligence. Those are all our force multipliers. And also looking at our own force multipliers in terms of assets now. We look at mobility. We have enhanced our mobility in terms of providing mobility for our rangers. We look at air mobility. We've got helicopters, we've got fixed wings, we've got lighter mobile vehicles. And also we've developed capacity for our special rangers. As alluded to our short presentation yesterday of the equipment that we are using, we're trying to make sure that every person that we deploy has got the capacity to be able to project themselves with confidence in dealing with the challenges that they might be able. We are trying to own the night, which is not usually easy. we're owning the night by using a lot of technologies, including sensors. Some of you might have heard about the WAS, which is a radar system that can operate around the clock during the day and night. And it's actually preferable at night because you can differentiate better between human and beast. We have to look at being more proactive by trying to protect the park from the outside and not from within. We need all the alliances around ourselves to start dealing with the issues before they get to us, because by the time they get into the park, it's already too late. So if we are proactive, getting the communities, the neighboring establishments like your game reserves, your concessions, getting involved, that will also alleviate our problems. We have to enhance our human intelligence and also technical intelligence in order for us to be on top of our game. Now, in terms of alliances, we've created a sort of an alliance which is a low-filter, the Bombay Environmental Asset Protection Alliance. It's not only looking at rhino. It's looking at all the species that are targeted, be it lion, be it vultures, be it elephants. So that alliance is made up. If you look at the map, you'll see on the Mozambican side, that red part, those are Mozambican concessions. Those people are running concessions on Mozambique. They owe their survival to the park being successful. If we are not successful, their businesses are going to crumble. The same as the GRU, Game Rangers United to the west. Those are your APNR, your Malamalas, your Sabisans, your Timbavatis. If the park does not succeed, their businesses are going to collapse as well. So they need to be part of the strong alliance we're talking about. To the north, you will all recall that we established a transfrontier conservation area with the Limpopo National Park, and with Bonorozoa to the north, with the Sangwe Corridor being the only challenge to link up to have this big conservation area, which is the transfrontier park that was to be incorporating both Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Mozambique. But that's work in progress. To the south of us, we've got a lot of private land, which is in the hands of our farmers. So we've created alliances with a group called Inkomazi Interest Group, called NIG for short. Those farmers are our eyes and ears to the south. They depend on the existence of the park for them to have their business as well, because we've got a river called the Crocodile River that is the boundary to the south from which they draw water. And also, if we're not here, a lot of their product would be stolen. So we're a buffer to them, they are a buffer to us. Although people don't like the word buffer, because people want to know, who are you buffering? I'm not buffering anything. Still on this structure of alliances, I will start from the right, looking at South Africa in general. We, as South African National Parks, we've got a component of rangers, together with special rangers, a wing, and protection services that are responsible to deal with ensuring the safety, not only of wild animals, but of also the tourists that come and visit the park, and ensuring the area integrity of the park. We got the SANPF, you might have seen some of them training us yesterday at our briefing. We also got police. They form a part of the Mission Area Joint Operations Center, which was formed during the Kruger in 2011. And that Mission Joint Operations Center has lies in function with a lot of components, like with those groupings, Game Rangers United, the Commerce Interest Groups, the Limpopo National Park, Mozambique, the Bombo Concession. So it plays a pivotal role in terms of linking up with all the stakeholders. Now, how do we measure our success? What have we done? First of all, we developed a clear strategy and plan of how we're going to deal with this. And we solicited both internal, external, and strategic funding in order for us to be able
to implement the plan. In the process, we've achieved some of the objectives of our first year, 3 year plan, which were to build an anti-poaching force that is second to none in Africa. We've established those alliances that we mentioned earlier, like the LIEPA. We've had quite a few initiatives with law enforcement in Mozambique between us, ANAC, and Guarda Frontera in Mozambique, dealing with the problems that are emanating out of Mozambique. We have increased operations based on intelligence, not just reactionary. We've improved our reaction capability, and we also consolidated the ranger support group. Remember, for rangers, it's only a limited number of people. So for them, it's every day the same thing over and over again. They don't have a chance to go back to base and recuperate. So when a person takes time off, when he comes back, he still goes back to the front. It's the front all the way. What are our risks going forward? What we envisage as risks amongst us in the South African National Parks is a ranger that could be convicted because of overreach. He might have been involved in a skirmish with poachers, and the legal system thinks he went above board, and that person gets arrested and be convicted. That's our biggest risk. Were that to happen, we might have a lot of moral degeneration from our rangers. The moment you lose morale and you've already lost the war, you cannot proceed. Another risk that has become a reality for us is the ranger down. We had quite a few incidents where our rangers were shotted, and we lost one in 2016, shot by poachers. And that really demoralized the grouping. They felt that it should not have happened. But on the other side, it made them realize how serious this conflict of poaching is. Biggest challenge sitting with us is the corruption of our personnel, not only rangers, all personnel that work within protected areas where rhinos are kept. We're just highlighting it for ourselves because we're supposed to be custodians. Actually, not supposed, we are custodians of these rhinos. We have got the fear of these poachers interfering with our tourists. It has not happened, but one day it will happen. And when that happens, it's going to impact negatively on us being able to attract tourists into our parks because they will perceive our parks as being unsafe. We have had issues of mass mobilization from Mozambique, especially during the lockdown. There was talk from Mozambicans that there were no rangers in the field because we were on lockdown, and we saw that physically, especially the first 2 months of that hard lockdown. April, May, there was just hordes and hordes of Mozambicans coming in, but they were not successful because we were waiting for them. But that mentality was out there, and it persists to this day that if they invade us and next coming in at different places, will be overrun. We're also sitting with a serious risk of all the stockpile of grind that we've collected since the 60s that's sitting in our vault. Maybe somebody clever might decide it's not worthwhile chasing rhinos in the field. Let's go for the ones that are already in stock. And that risk is not only to the stock, but it's to the people that are within those communities where the stock is kept. The other problem that we are picking up is the poisoning of carcasses, which has got the resulting knock-on effect of killing non-target species. Every time poachers poach an animal, they will lace the carcass with poison to stop vultures being detected because the park is so vast and we've got so few people dealing with it. Vultures are our indicators of activities in the area in terms of carcasses. So if they poison a carcass, we might not be able to see those vultures coming down to feed on the carcass and the in a position to know that there's been an incursion into an area. So those are some of the high-level risks that we've identified that we're working on to mitigate. What are our strategic options? We have tried by all means to involve all stakeholders. It's not a SANParks issue, it's a South African issue. We are engaging all legal means, your NPA, your judiciary, everybody is involved. Actually, we've got very good relationship in both two provinces that we operate with, Limpopo and Mpumalanga, in terms of those. But the challenge there is that they have got limited capacity. And also, our oldest recent trade is that no one man of our meetings. When we had the World Cup here, we were able to have courts that were dealing with the unruliness within 2 weeks and we're done. We didn't have to wait 5 years, 7 years, it's happening with the environmental trial. Why can't we have dedicated courts that deal specifically with environmental crime, and we deal with that decisively, like we did with the World Cup? I don't know. It's just me thinking out of the box and also out of anger sometimes. We have to intensify the protection of the species now. That is the rhino that is still living. We have to look at protecting the living rhino and not protecting the park. The park is just too big to protect. We have to know where our rhinos are. We have to look at technology to outclass the poachers. The poachers are not sophisticated. They don't carry sophisticated things. Even when you arrest them, the phones that they are carrying, you can't even track them because it's not fancy phones. We need to use the social media proactively to propagate. There's nothing wrong with sending out misinformation as well. We have to also look at options. If all else fails, what do we do? Do we dehorn the rhinos? Do we breed rhinos intensively? Do we relocate rhinos? Those should be options that we put on the table so that we can expand the thinking beyond just doing the same thing the same way over and over again. We have to also empower communities to take ownership of the asset. One of the things that we try to sell to the communities, we do lose cows with calves. And what we do, we take those calves to established areas to have them protected and reared. Why not get the communities to start orphanages to look after these calves so that they can start to understand the dynamics of the action of the perpetrators and also have ownership of these animals? Once these cows are at an age where they can be released back in the park, they can sell them back to some parks or to any other protected area so that they can derive some income out of them protecting these animals. We are not a sole force here. Like I mentioned, as you can see from the picture, we've got rangers, we've got military, we've got police, all involved in this work, but at different levels. For us, it is the main thing that we do. The others, they've got another function. They've got to look after the border of the country. And the police have got to come in to ensure that there's prosecution that happens, to make sure that people that are arrested are processed the right way. But our main focus is also on intelligence. Without intelligence, we can't get far. Enforcing the law comes with a lot of variables. One of those variables is greed outside is driven by the amount of illegal money that's out there that makes it possible for poachers to come in. The picture that you see there is not a picture that came from a bank somewhere. It was money that was confiscated from a poacher's house who had just been paid after a successful illegal hunt. We need to strengthen prosecution both in South Africa and Mozambique as our immediate neighbor. that we're sitting with the same problem. We need to get a lot of pressure diplomatically to our neighboring countries to deal with the issues that we're sitting with, the same way that we have here. The concept of a transfrontier law enforcement agency comes to mind when we talk about this. If we had such a thing, we tried to talk about it, I think about 11 years ago, but it didn't come to much. If we had a uniform system across the SADC area dealing with criminality in terms of environmental law, and if you run into Mozambique, you don't think you are safe from the crimes that you committed in South Africa, we wouldn't be having the problems that we're sitting with now. Because, first of all, the people that are living in Mozambique have got families in South Africa, so they come into South Africa, they integrate with the population in South Africa, they've got the same surname, they are the same people. So they can hunt here, go back into Mozambique, they are safe. What are we doing to fortify this place? We looked at a lot of measures. But looking at the population of rhinos, the vast majority of our rhinos are sitting in that bottom section of the park that is encircled by the red line. We call it the intensive protection zone. We have to put all our effort into protecting the remaining core of our rhinos. Beyond that, we tried a lot of other measures to protect the park, ground sensors, sensors on fences that get bent every time you got a fire and have to be replaced at a huge cost. We have to intensify our law enforcement. We have to put a lot of different obstacles. We have to look beyond what is there. I mean, technology evolves, so we have to evolve with the technology as well and keep up with the time, and that costs money, which we don't have. We have to outlast the criminals. You know, we've got a lot of intelligent people dealing with this. Maybe somewhere along the line, we need to start coming under one roof and talking the same language and use all the expertise that we're sitting with. Military have got their equipment, police have got their equipment, we've got our equipment, but it's not consolidated. Everybody is protected, is protecting their own interests. Maybe we bring this whole interest together and see how best we can deal with it. The role of government is very important here, which seems to be eluding us. Technology is there, but it's used differently, and we export it elsewhere instead of using it in-house. Propagate. We all know during World War II, there was a gentleman called Goebbels. He was a specialist in propaganda. The Germans were successful during World War II because of Goebbels. We need to learn from Goebbels, but for positive aspects, and use propaganda to our advantage. We use to mobilize people out there to own our rhinos. They must want to protect rhinos. They must see them as an asset, not just for protected areas, but for the country. Remember, we're not protecting these things for Kruger National Park or South Africa National Park or Development of Environment. We are protecting these animals for the country and also for the world. So we need to start sending out the right messages to the people, get the right buy-in from the people. People must own this. You know that saying, Private Ryan, some of people have watched that film. Now let's say Private Ryan. Some of the mitigations that we're proposing, maybe. We remove the horn. As you can see, we've highlighted the horn. We remove the horn and have rhinos roaming free. We relocate these animals to an enclave that would be safer to protect them and put a lot of investment into protecting them there. Maybe we should revisit the issue of trading with rhino horn. It's way above my pay grade, so it's just a suggestion from me. We have to try and look at whether the treating of rhino horn can be a deterrent, although you cannot infuse a rhino horn because of the density of the matter, but not doing anything is a problem. You know, when we talk propagate, we look at all those warnings but warn people what we're doing, even if we know that it's not really happening. But we need to get that through people's heads. Community involvement. Now, I mentioned in terms of communities, we have to look at many variables. We have to look at not only education. Education is key because the youth are the people that will carry us through to the next millennium. We educate them, they get to know what's happening, they buy into protecting the assets, that is the asset, and they take that message back to the parents at home. It helps a lot. We've got a number of projects that we've been doing with the communities. We've done libraries, we've done a few of the green projects with communities, and we've also done some of the like laboratories in some of the communities adjacent to the park. But it's not enough, we know that. We can do better. This was just to highlight the incidents that are happening. These are incidents that are happening the week that you can see. You can see towards the end of the week, the incidents tend to jump up. You get more incidents happening. People think we're not working on weekends. So that's why they are coming. Also, information gets out that budgets are cut, so we don't pay overtime and all that. We make do with what we have, and we are able to detect those incursions, as you can see. The blue line denotes the moon phase. We used to think that most of our activities would be more prominent during the full moon phase, but now what has happened shown us that these guys are coming consistently right across the lightness of the moon. Most of the activities are happening at night anyway. And my final slide will talk to this animal called the Kruger. The Kruger National Park is that big animal that you see there, although I had to put it on its side to fit it onto the screen. And down at the bottom where you see a lot of yellow, that's where most of our animals are sitting, and we've been losing animals. Those yellows are carcasses of rhinos for just the month of April. And that's where our concentration of rhinos are. And also we're sitting with the biggest infrastructure in terms of roads, gates, in the southern part of the park. So we've got more tourists coming to the south of the park because we've got more roads that allow them, especially the roads were there to enhance the tourist access into the park. But it served another purpose. It's made our lives really difficult in terms of managing the problem. And that brings me to the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Chair, just to that presentation, Chairperson, just two comments. We just finalized a new security plan for rhinos. What we are presenting here, that's what we're doing currently. There's a game plan. The game plan we are putting in place, we'll talk about it at some point with Parliament. But we would like it to succeed. What we are also saying, if we were to say we're losing the battle, but we're not convinced now we're losing the battle, saving the last 500 remaining, what do we do? We are saying we might want to come to Parliament to say, can we have a presidential decree whereby we put the last remaining somewhere in our country in a zone where the decree will say no fly zone. No one will go closer to that place, even 200 kilometers. if we get there, something else. But we might end up thinking that language of a national key point, whether it's here within Kruger or somewhere where we feel these animals will be safe. There are soft issues, honorable members, that we're thinking about. I think you spoke to some of them. We have offenders for rhino crime, YJ. We spoke to Minister Lamora to say, can we have the program? These offenders, they are taken to go and feed orphans, rhinos. It's a soft issue because they become repeat offenders. Therefore, as part of their rehabilitation, they must see the pain you see when you see those orphans. Therefore, there are elements, emotional elements, that we must get to the minds of the people doing this. Those are young people, are South Africans. They are from these poor communities. Last chapters and honorable members, is legislation enough to protect these rangers? Do we need a special legislation where a ranger in a conduct might have at night led to a fatality of a poacher? Are we protected enough as rangers? We don't want to end up now a ranger going to jail because the legislation is not covering you 100%. Because they are EMIs in terms of environmental law. But the work they do, is it protecting them enough, or must we have a special legislation to make sure that they are safe? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. We are under pressure in terms of time. I will allow him so that I don't take your time. Yes, I can see the hand of Honorable Weber. I'm still trying to get my glasses.
Does he hear?
Oh. Sorry, I can't have my eyes on my head. Honorable Paulson, you are number two. Honorable Phillips, number three. So for now, let me take those. Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for this presentation. I just have a short question. A couple of weeks ago, the dewarning started in Kruger of 300 rhinos. My question to this is, how many was dehorned already until now, and are they finished with this? And then relating to this presentation, the gentleman, Mr. Dukela, actually said they, you know, they're busy with the dehorning and they showed the nice picture. My question is that the poachers actually comes back for the insight underneath the skin. So my question is, how really protected are a dehorned rhino when they actually come back and just gouged out the rest of the horn out of the skin? I know it sounds horrible, but that is what they do. And then communication, our CEO from SANParks just mentioned it. The communication between provinces regarding multiple offenders. If you offend in Mpumalanga, say you were caught and then you say were out on bail and then you're caught again, so you are a regular offender. So what happens is they go to Limpopo and they carry on with this practice until they're caught there. And then they still the first time there because there's no communication between the provinces of a list of these offenders. So maybe my more a statement is, what can we do to ensure that the communication between the provinces, especially regarding offenders, can be seen so that people from the beginning knew this is not a first-time offender, and when they're caught, they actually can go to jail. And then interesting question. Is there any soldiers from other countries that is working inside the Kruger National Park as rangers? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Paulson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm partly covered by Honorable Weber when it comes to, I'd like to know on the side of the neighboring countries to the park, what are their initiatives and how is it coordinated with what happens here in South Africa? And also, you know, cheaper than helicopters would be drones, and I know there's a drone pilot in the park, so I'd like to know, surveillance, is it, how often is it done with drones, are there regular or scheduled surveillance operations with where they make use of drones? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Phillips.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I just like to thank you very much for that presentation. And I just have one question, and it's going to be difficult for you to decide. But when you need to go home as parliamentarian, you go back to parliament, what is the one thing that you would want us to really concentrate on and drive on your behalf to save our lives?
Please, ma'am, can you repeat again?
When we go back to Parliament, what is the one thing that you would like us to drive on your behalf, the most important thing, to do help to save our lives? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable
Phillips.
Thank you for the presentation. Just a couple of questions. The first one is that one of the items that was mentioned at the risk was corruption, internal corruption, was created as a test, as a highest risk. I just want to find out if you can give us some more information in terms of how the funding grant can be worked in the park and what the protocols are around that. That's the first question. The second one is the range that we saw last night with the special meeting. In terms of the section ranges, can you explain the difference between the section ranges and those ranges and the role that section ranges play? And whether it would be possible for us, if not during this visit, but perhaps in a subsequent visit, to also meet some of the section ranges to chat around their concerns as well, because I know some of those have also been raised in the media on that. Yesterday it was mentioned that there were fence monitors.
Environmental monitors.
Yes, that's one of the things.
Yes, environmental monitors.
And that there was a need for around about 300, and there were around about 70 something currently in place. My question is whether or not it would be possible to look at using EWP funding to increase the number of fence monitors, whether that's something that's been looked into as another possibility. And then just two more points. Fully agree with the sentiments around the FK supports. We know what happened with the regional court that was shut down after a very long time reopened. I'm not going to go into more detail, but I think we all know what transpired there. And then just finally, in terms of what's been spoken about recently, this ranger rotation policy, in particular the rotation around the intensive protection zone at the bottom, we have the highest incursion to the highest number of ranges being posted, the highest grouping, the large grouping requirement. Can you expand on how the ranger rotation policy works and you know how that is succeeding or not succeeding with regards to the we can then allow responses, but we are under pressure now. At least latest 5 to 10, we must have society. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The colleagues will come in. I'll just touch on the one Honorable Weber. I couldn't hear everything, but there was one question about movement of offenders. There is a scheme, I suppose. For us, as we said, we're also doing intelligence work. We track that. Some will do something here, some will go to KZN, because they didn't move around. But we do have a system of our own tracking them. But in terms of the justice system, we can't answer that one to say, is it the same? But when we present a case, we'll say it's the same offender who was in KZN, he moved to Limpopo, and then he's back in Kruger. We're able to do that one. And soldiers from other countries, again, we'll talk about that one if we do have them. Honorable Paulsen, on the use of drones, he's spoken a lot about it. You can hear the Morgan later. But most people talking about use of drones, we talk here of the Kruger Bush. Will better see someone coming with a camera that is so strong for this bush to determine between a person and an animal. A shadow of a tree and an animal and a person. But for now, people are trying to sell us drones, but they don't sort the peoples. But we still look forward to someone to come with a better solution for the use of the drones. Our colleagues will add on that share. It's a difficult question. But I don't want us to say, push one thing and then we change our minds. I don't know. I think let's leave that on the parliament, given what we are presenting. One of the priorities on the use of corruption and polygraphy. When we started it, there was some resistance. I want Clara to add this one and Danny on polygraphy. The behavior of our staff towards it. As a result, as a year, we polygraph everyone up to CEO. To show by example that we need to do it. It does not mean, but we don't know what to do. If your results are telling the story, can we fire you? I doubt. Our head of human capital is here. I saw her earlier. We can allude to that, but our difficulty. Private sector, they say, we are not allowed in my farm. If you tested positive in the photograph. But our staff will have an employment contract with you. In the new plan, I must say it here, we want to have this special ranger corps where when you sign, we say the day you tested positive, don't come back. But you must be in the employment contract for me to talk to unions. We don't just unilaterally do that one. On the role of Station Ranger, Fukela will talk to that one. On the environmental monitors, Honorable Brian, the money we use is from EPWP. That's why we're able to add, not only for Kruger, on the coast and other parts we add them. But the level of training we put is another issue. Because we get tempted sometimes, instead of monitoring the fence, can they go inside and also fight? If I therefore think Tukela can talk more to that, but we are using EPWP money. Therefore, colleagues, you will add where I start with you, Tukela, quickly.
Thank you, Sia. Thank you, Chair. I think Dan can allude to some of the movements, and if you can talk to the movement of our personnel. Mike.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, honorable members. Movement of IMS is part of the employment contract. And one of operational reasons with, big considerations for a lot of reasons, for the movement that you cannot talk about our staff that here in the town. That they've been faced with this relentless onslaught for many, many years, and we see psychological problems emerging. So there is a need to reflect these problems, just to give them a little bit of a break, and also to build capacity in other staff. But this is not a fight of a couple of owners or one person or the guys in the staff. We have to tackle this as a true part behind the staff, using all our resources. Not just the Rangers. We keep talking about the Rangers, but this is far bigger problem than just the Rangers problem. It's an African problem. Just as much as the Rangers are involved here, our medical people need to be involved. Our finance people, our scientists, it's not just the Rangers problem. And making the Rangers problem is incredibly unfair on these guys. It really was a loss of unnecessary stress on them. So, is for reaching a number of these larger objectives. It is also using staff to their best capacity. So it's not a strange thing, Rangers have been moved for ever, and that is part of what we sign up for generators. The last thing, of course, that managed to improve what we do is jeopardize conservation function in the group, you know, that is what we have to do with these protections and protection of members is just part of it. Thank you, Chair. So, this one also got some of the warning questions as well.
Yeah.
Thank you. Just some of the warning. The warning, of course, is only one of the questions that we need to look. As we understand the problems with this, certainly you can't move and remove the whole form, and there is always a just less that people can come back for. So that is not the answer, but it's part of the answer. We have beyond about 250 animals so far, and we focus very much in specific areas, in the former rhino area and some of the peripheral areas, but the main focus is on the traps. When we talk about rhino management and rhino population management, male rhino and female rhino are not equal. When you look at a graph about animals that are posed, you see a number. But when a male animal gets posed, it is one animal. When a female animal gets posed, you lose immediately about three animals. The calf on foot and the zebras that you pay. So three run immediately. They're not even counting the subsequent calves. So female rhino is worth 10 animals, in fact. But they are the most important. That's why a lot of now
focus characters are focusing on protecting the females. But if you deworm every single animal, there's no choice for the poacher. You should be what's in front of you. When there's a female animal without a worm, you've got to make a choice. So I go for the one with the deworm,
or do I go for a male animal? And also, even in natural systems, the spectral ratio of rhino equilibrium is 1:1. So for every female rhino, there's a male rhino. We know in terms of biology, only about 10% of the males are involved in breeding. So there's 40% of the males that are not directly involved in breeding. They just set animals as part of the particular population. So these are just one of the layers actions that Kruger is currently looking at to protect the climate and manage the population. Other issues, whether we are looking at and implementing and looking at managing the core of animal habitat to make it better for animals and for them to reach maximally. So, but we can talk about all these biological actions that we implement also at the right stage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I will talk to drones quickly because drones seems to, people think it's a proverbial pill that will sort out our ills. We have used drones in the park extensively. We've used even the biggest drone that Dana could make available to us, which was the Sika. The Sika flew for 6 months in the park, and in those 6 months they had only two hits, which they could confirm at great expense to us. Drones have got a space and time in terms of operation. They have got a serious limitation in terms of the park because of, first of all, they've got limited hours that they can fly. Secondly, the interpretation of the image that you see, you need to be able to understand what you see and make the correct detection. And also they are limited in terms of how far they can fly and still beam the image back to the person that sees. So you can't just send a drone flying and hope that after a time they're going to download the information and see, because by then it's already historical. Those are some of the dynamics of drones. If you've got a drone that's got the right payload, that's got the right endurance, and you've got people that are monitoring it around the clock, and that understand what they see, it might be successful, but the African bush is not very kind to drones. We've used a lot of systems with people on board aircraft, for example, the COILA system that is on the military caravan. We've used it successfully in the park, but it has not yielded the result that we want. We've walked people into what we thought were targets, only to find an end hill at night. The heat that's coming out is a signature that it's a human. So it's quite a serious challenge to deal with drones. If you don't have a person that's going to interpret the image that you see and understand.
Can we...
Thank you, sir. And the issue around different provinces are arresting the same person, and it becomes the first offender in those areas, is being dealt with through the Mission Area Joint Operations Center. And those Joint Operations Center got communications with our friends in Limpopo, here in the province in Mpumalanga, in KZN, the Northwest, all the arrangements where there's violence, even the Free State, we communicate, we share information. When a person gets arrested, that data is shared immediately so that people can know whether this person was involved in illegal activities in this province or not. Before that person even appears in court, that information will have circulated to all the arrangements. So we managed to be able to stop those kind of people slipping through because they did not know that the president had been arrested also. But our biggest challenge though, because of our presence being full, the same repeat offenders are being released to left, right and center, and also the slowness of the prosecution. There are cases that come from as far back as 2011 that have still not come before court now. Have been postponed over time because it's just too much on the court roll. And like I said, a dedicated court will be able to deal with that backlog. Are there other questions that I missed, perhaps? Sorry?
to photograph.
Ma'am?
To photograph.
Reasonable suspicion that the employee might have been involved in the particular incident, and that kind of information gathering is then used through a disciplinary process that has been defined within SANPAS and is taken from that. It is mainly used as information gathering, but not necessary to determine it. I think I should leave it at that.
Right,
we use it and then we do submit it as part of the information gathering in criminal cases, yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
The meeting is closed now. Now let's meet at 12 those who will come back and ask to visit.
Yeah.